Detta är Ekots lördagsintervju med Ukrainas nya ambassadör i Sverige, Svetlana Zaliszczuk. Välkomna! Och vi spelar in den 30 oktober. Johar Bendjelloul heter jag och intervjun den översätter vi i efterhand. Ambassador Zaliszczuk, welcome to lördagsintervjun.
Thank you so much for inviting me.
You've been Ukraine's ambassador to Sweden for 2 months now. What is it like to move from war-torn Kyiv to Stockholm?
Personally, of course, it's relief when it comes to nights. You can sleep through. No rockets, no drones. I have a small baby, so we can stay in our beds and not to go to shelters or to the cellar to sleep. But of course, there is also, I'm here as a citizen, as a Ukrainian, as an ambassador. So what I'm doing is to trying to enhance our cooperation with Sweden and to make sure that there is more defense, more deterrence in Ukraine so that people who stayed in Ukraine also have to go to cellars and to the shelters less.
Svetlana Zaliszczuk har varit Ukrainas ambassadör i Sverige i 2 månader. En personlig förändring mot livet i Kiev är att hon och hennes barn nu får sova på nätterna, berättar hon. Inga raketer, inga drönare, att slippa gå upp mitt i natten för att söka skydd i skyddsrum och källare. Som ambassadör vill hon stärka det militära samarbetet med Sverige så att alla ukrainare också ska slippa skyddsrum om natten, säger hon. Last week we had a big thing happening here in Sweden. President Zelensky was here visiting us and you were also present in Linköping when plans were presented for Ukraine to buy the JAS Gripen fighter jet. What difference would JAS Gripen make in the defense of Ukraine?
I would like to say that Gripen project is not just about, fighter jets, deal between Sweden and Ukraine. This is the investment into the European security, if you want your security in particular. Of course, when we talk about the war, you imagine rockets in the skies of Ukraine, but Russian rockets in the skies of Ukraine, but you have Russian drones here in Stockholm City over your critical infrastructure. You have Russian submarines in Baltic Sea. You have Russian diversion operations operating here in the NATO and European Union space to undermine your security. So when we talk about the Gripen agreement, it's about how we are going to create the air shield, not just for Ukraine, but also for EU, but Sweden as well, in particular. This is about enhancing our air capabilities and making sure that we can protect our skies also will mean that you can protect yours.
Yeah, but what would it mean to Ukraine during this war to be able to use JAS Gripen for the defense of Ukrainian territory?
Well, first of all, let's talk about numbers. The numbers that have been publicized, it's between 100 and 150 air jets that we can receive in the foreseeable future. But it's not going to happen already right now. It will happen later, depends on the manufacturing capacity, depends on the financing program that we are negotiating right now. But in practical means, it means that our military operations will be much more effective, that also we will be able to protect our skies much more, means that less rockets, less drones will penetrate our skies and therefore land on the heads of our peaceful citizens.
I förra veckan var ambassadör Zaliszczuk på plats i Linköping när president Zelensky och statsminister Kristersson presenterade planer på leveranser av JAS Gripen till Ukraina. Hon säger att JAS-projektet inte bara ska ses som en affär mellan Sverige och Ukraina utan som en investering i europeisk säkerhet i stort. Att Ukraina kan försvara sitt luftrum stärker andra europeiska länders säkerhet. JAS Gripen skulle göra Ukrainas militära operationer mer effektiva och skydda fredliga medborgare, säger hon.
Yeah, as you say, this is a agreement. It's a so-called letter of intent, which is really not the same as a done deal. And the details are still few. When do you expect the first deliveries of JAS Gripen?
Our teams are negotiating it right now, and I'm sure in due time it will be published.
According to Prime Minister Kristersson, the first plane could be delivered within, at the earliest, within 3 years. Would that be soon enough for Ukraine?
We would like it to be sooner, and we also negotiate about other jets that can be delivered earlier. But as I've said, we are working on it to make sure that they come as soon as possible.
And the financing of this deal is also not yet clear. Who do you think will pay for these new fighter jets for Ukraine?
There have to be multiple sources to finance the program. I would mention few. First of all, it's frozen assets. You know very well that at the moment in Brussels we are negotiating the so-called reparation loan for Ukraine, which will be given by using the frozen assets arrested or frozen on EU territory. I think it will be the most fair way to finance Ukrainian fight to continue this war. Also, we talked to different international partners that interested to enhance, to strengthen Ukrainian air capabilities. We can also consider that, you know, that Sweden supports Ukraine with military packages. For example, during this year, in 2025, you spent approximately $4 billion, and the same you committed for the next 2 years, in 2006 and 2007. Approximately $4 billion a year. I think some of this money can be used, as well as Ukraine can spend its own resources to procure the jets, the fighters, that will be a very important, a crucial pillar of our security guarantees. Mm.
Mycket är fortfarande oklart kring JAS-affären. Antalet plan, när planen kan levereras och vem som ska betala. Förhandlingar pågår, säger Svetlana Zelischuk. När det gäller finansieringen krävs flera källor. Att använda frysta ryska tillgångar i EU vore det mest rättvisa, säger hon. Utländska stödpengar och Ukrainas egna resurser kommer också användas. Möjligen kommer svenska Saab att bygga en fabrik i Ukraina för att montera JAS-plan. Svetlana Zelischuk bekräftar att sådana samtal ägt rum.
We heard reports now that Swedish defense company Saab, who manufactures JAS Gripen, plans to build a factory in Ukraine where parts of the JAS Gripen could be assembled. What can you tell us about those plans?
I can just mention that it has been discussed at the meeting between my president, your prime minister, and the head, the CEO of Saab. I've seen this interview, and I can just prove that those negotiations took place. But it's too early to make it public, any of the negotiations in that direction. But as you know, Ukraine historically had its own manufacturing capacities to produce airplanes, and we will try to use those to build the cooperation between Saab and Ukraine.
So many unclear details. Are you confident that Ukraine will actually receive the JAS fighter jets?
I am confident. The same way I'm confident about many other things that couldn't have happened but happened. Like in the beginning of the war in 2022, I remember when Russians were already very close to Kyiv, and we talked to our international partners and we said, please, give us anti-missile systems. And our partners said, no, that's impossible, that's escalation. But today we have patriots standing in Kyiv protecting my own home from Russian ballistic missiles. I remember the conversations about the tanks that we wanted to receive to advance on the front line to protect our, to fight Russians back. And that also was the answer, initial answer from partners, that's impossible, that's the escalation. But then we had Abrahams from Americans, we had other tanks from Germany, from other countries that we are using now on the front line. We have your artillery, we have Swedish system, we have archers, we have CV90 that are extremely effective on the front line.
Trots alla oklarheter kring JAS-affären är Svetlana Zelischuk trygg med att Ukraina verkligen kommer att få JAS-plan. Det som verkat svårt eller politiskt omöjligt i början har ofta blivit verklighet med tiden under kriget, säger hon. Den senaste tiden,
När vintern närmar sig har Ryssland trappat upp kriget från luften med syfte att krossa Ukrainas energisystem. När Ryssland är svaga vid frontlinjen satsar man nu mer på att skrämma civila, säger hon.
Let's talk about what's going on right now. Winter is approaching. And recently Russia has escalated the war from the air, trying to damage Ukraine's infrastructure and energy system. You know, electricity grid, heating, gas infrastructure and so on. How do you understand Russia's tactics strategy at this time?
They are impotent on the front line. Therefore, they bomb our cities to intimidate civilians. They increased indeed, and thank you for mentioning it, they increased the attacks on the civilian infrastructure, electricity, heating, water, to deny people those essential, you know, services, because if you don't have those, it's difficult to leave. But people are very resilient, and we are working right now with international partners to support us with those equipment to get through the winter.
And what is that? What does Ukraine need the most right now in order to counter these attacks?
First of all, I'll mention anti-missile system. And this is what my president mentioned while he was here in Sweden. We need another Patriot. We need few of those systems to be more efficient. Secondly, it's gas. Russians attacked our gas production. Ukraine has been already self-sufficient with its own gas production. We use gas for central heating. But unfortunately, the Russians deliberately attacked those gas production sites. So we don't have enough gas to warm up people's houses. Usually we start the heating. By the way, here in Sweden, you know, in Stockholm, my apartment is warm. It has been warm already for a month. I think Ukrainians started to heat their houses only literally today. Okay. So there were a few very cold weeks in Kyiv, in my town, but also across the country. So we need to procure gas. It's expensive. We need to export. So this is some of the resources we are being mobilized now. But secondly, and let me say, we need also generators, diesel generators that can work as equipment that can support the function of some administrative buildings, even schools, you know, kindergartens and so on. And we ask people, those who can help us with it, in particular also here in Sweden. And I'd like to use this interview to spread the word. And if you think that you can help Ukrainians at the moment, the most efficient way would be to help us with some generators. Yeah,
spare diesel generators.
Correct.
Hon säger att Ukraina behöver tre saker just nu för att bemöta det ryska luftkriget mot energisystemen. Fler antimissilsystem som amerikanska Patriot, mer gasimport och fler enklare dieselgeneratorer. Om vanliga människor undrar vad de kan hjälpa Ukraina med just nu, så är det just det. Skänk en dieselgenerator om du har den över, säger hon.
On a higher level of diplomacy, a crucial question is always how the US will act now. Is there a risk that the US might abandon Ukraine?
US support remains crucial militarily, financially and morally. Moreover, I would like to say that this, in my mind, this transatlantic bridge keeps the democracy firm, standing firm against tyranny overall. And despite the fact that this bridge, this transatlantic bridge, may have got some rusty, you know, and we have to renovate it and maintain it in some parts, and it's not easy, this geopolitical dialogue. But it seems to me that in Washington, there is a strengthening recognition that Washington cannot allow themselves to have Putin victorious.
But there is also a certain amount of unpredictability regarding Trump's policies. There are many sudden shifts lately. Would you say that the US is a reliable ally?
I think that this shift is taking the right direction. That is undeniable. The intensity of the communication between my president and President Trump, the nature of those conversations became, I would say, much better. And we see now that the best, probably the best statement that Trump has ever made during his administration towards Ukraine is his sanctions, application of the sanctions on Rosneft and Lukoil.
Yes, that happened last week. Rosneft and Lukoil are the two largest oil companies in Russia. The first really serious economic sanctions on Russia from President Trump during this term. Do you think these sanctions will last?
Well, first of all, in our calculation, it will cost Russians $5 billion per month. But we'll see in the end of the month. Let's wait. And it's a serious, serious damage to their budget that they use to finance the warfare. Whether they will last, we will see. It's very difficult, ungrateful thing to predict. But I think this is a real pressure on Putin to give up on its war efforts and sit down and negotiate.
USA:s agerande i kriget är avgörande. Svetlana Zalishchuk säger att den transatlantiska länken kanske blivit lite rostig, den behöver renoveras och lagas, men hon tycker sig se en insikt i Washington om att Ryssland inte kan tillåtas vinna. I förra veckan gjorde president Trump sitt bästa ställningstagande hittills som president, säger hon, när han införde sanktioner mot Rysslands två största oljebolag, Rosneft och Lukoil. Ett drag som kommer att skada den ryska krigskassan på riktigt och sätta verklig press på Putin.
On the European level, as you already mentioned, there are no negotiations going on about using these frozen Russian assets. There are huge amounts of money, that's 200 billion euros that might be used in order to finance large loans to Ukraine. It has been described as a possible game changer. Is that a fair description?
Absolutely. I think that Putin's calculation into exhaust Ukraine financially, if Russian frozen, and maybe I should say when Russian frozen assets will come to Ukraine, Putin will get a clear message that Ukraine is financed for the next 3 years, that the West supports its fight, and therefore Putin will not get what he wants. Putin will be denied achieving these goals. That's another pressure on Russia to get to the negotiations table. Mm.
Samtidigt pågår diskussioner i Bryssel om att använda frysta ryska tillgångar i EU för att ge lån till Ukraina. Detta kan vara en game changer, säger ambassadör Zalishchuk. Ukrainas ekonomi skulle vara tryggad för flera år framåt. Ytterligare press på Putin, säger hon. Kriget är nu inne på sitt fjärde år. Ukraina har idag Europas starkaste och mest erfarna väpnade styrkor. Det finns en hel del som Sverige kan lära av Ukraina när det gäller krigföring, säger hon. What can Sweden learn from Ukraine in terms of warfare?
That's a very good question. I think in the beginning of the war, we were coming to international partners asking for help. Today, during the fourth year of this war, we can teach a lot. We can share with the real-time battlefield data on the use of even your own weapon, of how it is utilized, of how it can be improved, of what are the lessons learned. Secondly, you have this concept of total defense. I think it's another dimension when we can share our experience not only about how our army is fighting this war, but how society should be prepared on all of the levels, including all the institutions.
Yeah, and what could we learn from Ukraine regarding this totalförsvaret, the total defense you're talking about?
That it's not only army's exercise, it's also it's the whole society. The whole society mission, and even every single citizen has to be prepared.
Yeah, what do you think ordinary Swedes can learn from Ukrainian civilians, the way they have dealt with the war?
One of the most important things probably is something that I was incapable to do on the eve of the war. You know, despite the fact that there was a lot of information and we knew that it's coming and that Russia was amassing their troops on the border with Ukraine, on a human level, somehow it was impossible to accept that it will knock your door. And therefore, you're kind of serious, but only half serious about it. And you prepared the documents, you know, to be ready to be get evacuated, but it's not enough. You have to think about strategically about how your family will survive, whether you have shelter, which is well equipped with all the system to provide necessary, you know, services like water, food, heating, light. This is something you can really learn from us.
Mm-hmm. So you say that ordinary Swedes need to prepare mentally for a possible war in Sweden.
Yes, it's something very difficult to absorb that something so horrific can happen to you. But this is what we thought in 2022 as well, but it did happen to us.
Hon säger att Sverige kan ta lärdom av Ukraina vad gäller totalförsvaret, hur varje enskild medborgare kan förbereda sig. En av de viktigaste sakerna är att acceptera att kriget faktiskt kan komma på riktigt. Att göra verkliga planer kring hur din familj då ska överleva. Hur vi ska få vatten, mat, värme, tak över huvudet. Det är väldigt svårt att ta in att något så fruktansvärt kan hända dig, säger hon. Vi ukrainare tyckte också att det var svårt att ta in före 2022, säger Svetlana Zalishchuk.
We'll change the subject. President Zelensky, he has a 5-year term as a president and it expired in May 2024. When will Ukraine hold presidential elections again?
After the war. The Constitution of Ukraine clearly says that elections cannot be conducted during the war. And to be honest, I mean, of course, this is our constitutional norm, but also from just a practical point of view, in order to conduct a fair elections, just elections, you need to do demobilization. You have to give the rights for the army to participate and for the voters to have security to vote. Unfortunately, we don't have that luxury at the moment. So in the end of the war.
Is there another way of, you know, allowing Ukrainians to have their say on how the country is governed, even in wartime?
I think that if you look at the opinion polls, it's up to 70% of people support Zelensky electorally, right? What does it say? It says that people have full trust and recognizes the authority of the current government to fight this fight. So on that level, I think that democracy is functioning.
Yeah, but
I think it would be different if society wouldn't have trust in the government of how government is running this war or running this, basically the government, then that would be in a different question.
Well, it's still like 17 months overdue when it comes to his presidential terms. Do you think that does President Zelensky in any way need to renew his legitimacy as the political leader of Ukraine?
I think that we have to follow the constitution of my country. And our Ukrainian law says it very crystal clear that elections cannot be conducted under war conditions because the war cannot, the country won't be able to ensure fair and just elections.
President Zelenskys femåriga mandatperiod som president tog egentligen slut i maj 2024. Enligt Ukrainas konstitution kan val inte hållas i krigstid och det vore också praktiskt svårt, säger Svetlana Zalishchuk. Den lyxen har vi inte för tillfället. Presidentval kan ske när kriget är slut, säger hon. Hur skulle då en framtida relation med Ryssland kunna se ut när kriget en dag tar slut? Ryssland kommer ju alltid att finnas där vid Ukrainas gräns som en grannstat.
What is your vision of a future post-war relationship between Ukraine and Russia?
Oh, there will be another 100 years before we would be able to look in that direction with any other feeling than hate, you know? Sorry to say so, but yes, it is so. Because when your neighbor, pregnant with twins, having two sons, you know, with all her family, is killed, and you know the girl, you have been knowing her for all your life, what are the feelings you can feel? If your son doesn't have legs coming back from the front line. If, you know, when you see these tragedies happening every single day, and this barbaric war was unprovoked. Ukraine was never an enemy to Russia, or Ukraine was never preparing any aggression towards Russia. So,
but is there a path in any way towards coexistence between Russia and Ukraine, given that they will always be neighbors? You have this border and it will be there.
We will coexist with democratic countries. And before Russia gets democratic, I don't think that the nature of our relationship might change, as well as your relationship as well. Russia is a threat, is an existential threat for Ukraine and for EU, for Sweden in particular. They are already killing your citizens, poisoning them on European territories, sending the here drone, not to, you know, not for building an amicable friendship, but to understand how they can destroy. So that's what we should be prepared for.
How is Ukraine preparing for a possible time when Vladimir Putin is no longer in power in Russia?
After Vladimir Putin, there will be another Vladimir Putin. That's at least how I see the development, societal developments in Russia itself. I'm not sure that Russia is going to become democratic in the foreseeable future. Russia has to lose. Russia has to surrender in order for some changes to be able to happen. That's what happened in Germany after the World War II. You know, there was a full surrender, and therefore justice could have happen after the World War II. With having authoritarian regime, tyranny in Russia, not just against Ukraine, Europe, but its own citizens, let's be honest, I think that we should envisage any post-Putin regime in the very close future.
Det kommer att ta 100 år innan vi kan tänka på relationen med Ryssland med någon annan känsla än hat, säger ambassadör Zalishchuk. När din granne dödar dina vänner, om en son kommer tillbaka från fronten utan ben, vad ska du då känna? Ryssland är ett existentiellt hot mot Ukraina, mot EU, mot Sverige. Innan Ryssland blir en demokrati kan vår relation inte förändras, säger hon. Och detta kommer inte att ske inom överskådlig framtid. Ryssland måste förlora. Ryssland måste kapitulera fullständigt, som Tyskland gjorde efter andra världskriget, säger hon.
Finally, in your profile on X, you call yourself an optimist. What are the main reasons to be optimistic about the future of Ukraine?
That's the only way to survive. I think that expecting the better future is our way to survive.
Do you have any? Are there any specific news? Could you give us anything recently that have made you more optimistic?
I think that very important thing to understand that Putin is not winning. This is the narrative that they try to promote, but they are not. On the front line, Putin wanted to conquer Ukraine in 3 days, but today he doesn't control more territory that he controlled in 2022. Also, first American sanctions, Rosneft, Lukoil, then frozen assets. I do believe that in December we're going to have that decision. Ukraine in 2022 was asking for weapon. Today we produce almost 40% of our own weapon. NATO and EU united as never before. We are realizing the new agreement on Gripen, which will be important pillar of not only our security, but your security. I think the time is leaning towards the victory of Ukraine. I'm sure that we will remain a prosperous, sovereign, independent state. That's why I'm optimistic about.
Svetlana Zalishchuk kallar sig optimist i sin profil på plattformen X. Det är det enda sättet att överleva, säger hon. Och det finns skäl till optimism vad gäller Ukrainas framtid, menar hon. Det är viktigt att förstå att Putin inte vinner. Ryssland kontrollerar inte mer ukrainsk territorium nu än 2022. De amerikanska sanktionerna, EUs arbete för att ge Ukraina frysta ryska tillgångar, att Ukrainas egen vapenindustri växer, Gripen överenskommelsen med Sverige. Tiden talar för Ukraina, säger hon.
Svetlana Zalishchuk, ambassador of Ukraine to Sweden. Thank you for coming to Ekots lördagsintervju.
Thank you for having me here.
I studion nu vår Ukraina-korrespondent Lubna Elshanti som lyssnat på den här intervjun. Var något särskilt du fäster dig vid?
Det var flera saker, bland annat det här Gripen-projektet som framställs som ett vinnande koncept. Det pratas om det med väldigt positiva ordalag när det egentligen är bara en avsiktsförklaring. Det finns ingenting som är spikat. Vi vet inte ifall Ukraina kommer få de här planen, vem som ska betala för dem. Och samtidigt så har ju Sverige möjlighet att förse Ukraina med plan redan imorgon eller redan igår om man så ville. Och det är intressant att det inte nämndes under intervjun att det inte har funnits ambitioner från ukrainsk sida att försöka få till de här leveranserna tidigare.
Och det här med en möjlig fabrik i Ukraina där man sätter ihop JAS-plan, vad vet du om det?
Ja, som hon sa så pågår det diskussioner, men vad jag har förstått från det ukrainska flygvapnet så är det väldigt svårt att skapa en fabrik i Ukraina i och med att mycket av infrastrukturen och speciellt den militära infrastrukturen utsätts för ryska attacker hela tiden. Så det blir väldigt svårt för Saab att etablera en fabrik i Ukraina.
En sak vi pratade om är president Zelenskyjs stöd i Ukraina. Det var ju val senast 2019 och hans presidentperiod gick egentligen ut förra året. Vilket stöd har han?
Ja, i början av den fullskaliga invasionen så hade ju Zelenskyj ett enormt stöd, över 90% enligt vissa undersökningar. Idag så har det ju sjunkit till ungefär 60%, men fortfarande så har han ett brett stöd, även om kritiken mot honom hörs allt mer. Samtidigt så, precis som Svetlana var inne på, så är det omöjligt att hålla val under krigstid, dels för att det strider mot konstitutionen men också för att det är väldigt svårt att organisera val i och med att man inte kan få garantera att folk kan rösta. Men det finns ju andra sätt att visa vad man tycker om presidenten. Ukraina har ett väldigt mångfacetterat medielandskap, många tidningar, många nyhetsmedier som bevakar och som vågar vara kritiska. Man kan fortfarande protestera helt fritt och det har vi också sett till exempel i somras så var det väldigt stora protester i Ukraina mot Zelenskyjs lagförslag kan man säga om att inskränka antikorruptionsmyndigheters oberoende och till slut så ändrades detta. Så det finns fortfarande sätt för befolkningen att visa sitt missnöje eller vad man tycker på olika sätt.
Mm. Vi talade också om två storpolitiska rörelser just nu. Dels så har ju USA faktiskt sanktionerat de stora ryska oljebolagen Rosneft och Lukoil, första sanktionerna under Trumps andra period här nu som president. Också de här diskussionerna i EU om att frigöra de här frusna ryska tillgångarna skulle handla om 200 miljarder euro, väldigt stora summor. Hur är läget där?
Ja, Ukraina har faktiskt en diplomatisk medvind i och med de här två händelserna. Men de sker efter en tid då Ukraina och USA har haft väldigt frostiga relationer. Det var inte ens ett år sedan vi såg det här bråket i Vita huset mellan Zelenskyj och Trump. Och nu pratar man om som om det inte hade hänt. Nu är tonen någonting helt annat. Men samtidigt så är det väldigt lite som Ukraina får av USA. Man får inget konkret vapenstöd utan det man får är att man kan köpa vissa typer av vapen. Så relationen mellan USA och Ukraina är fortfarande inte den som den en gång var, alltså under Joe Bidens presidentskap. Men den är bättre, men framställs som oproblematisk.
En annan sak vi talade om var ju framtida relationer mellan Ukraina och Ryssland. Där uttrycktes ju ambassadören ganska hårt, får man ju säga. Är det en attityd du känner igen från när du är i Ukraina?
Absolut. Det kände jag väldigt tydligt under intervjun att det här är faktiskt någonting jag ofta hör i Ukraina. Det är väldigt svårt att tänka sig en försoning med ett land som dagligen attackerar civila, bombar skolor, bombar bostäder. Och det kommer nog ta, precis som precis som ambassadören sa, väldigt lång tid innan man ens kan titta mot Ryssland utan att känna hat. Så det är absolut en bild som jag känner igen. Mm.
Tack så mycket, Lobna El-Shanti. Det var allt för den här veckan. Lördagsintervjun produceras av Johanna Palmström, teknik Brady Chauvier och Fabian Begnert. Nästa vecka är arbetsmarknadsminister Johan Britz gäst här. Johar Bendjelloul heter jag. Tack för att ni har lyssnat.